Hello and welcome to January's Essex Girls Guide to Life. And today we are going to be doing J. That's where we've reached on our philosophical journey. And we are looking at Jung. That's spelt with a J.
Just for clarification.
And we're going to be talking about January. January blues, detox, cake. Oh, cake.
There's cake in the room.
Cake, starvation and deprivation for our. And we are all also, I think this is ours idea is that we're going to do jugs as well. We're going to be discussing no more page three. Well, actually, yeah, we're going to be discussing what happened this week with page three.
Yes, we are. It all fits in. And are we going to mention Je suis Charlie as well?
Should we see?
Okay.
Should we see if it comes up?
All right, then.
Yeah. Okay, okay, so I think we're going to start off with... Oh, by the way, Nick is here. So
hello.
Nick, say hi.
Hello, hi. And can I be the last to say Happy New Year?
Oh, hey, yeah. Yeah, Happy New Year, everybody.
No, it is, isn't it? The first time we've been on.
It is?
Yes.
Yeah, we didn't do Christmas in the end.
No, next year.
Next year.
Next year we'll have the Christmas party.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Hire a massive function suite to get everyone in. okay, so what we're going to kick off with then?
Do you want to just give us a brief outline of Jung and his ideas, and then we'll have some songs, maybe a bit from the book.
Okay. Right, so Jung, I can't believe you're actually doing this because this is quite heavy.
Yes.
Okay,
but
right.
The collective unconsciousness and the idea of archetypes is what we're going to discuss, isn't it?
Well, I hope so. I mean, basically, let me just refer to my magic book. Right, here we go. Jung, he was a Swiss psychiatrist who was post-Freud, and he developed analytic psychology, which stressed the positive influences of deep-seated drives and linked personal psychology to archetypal cultural patterns. He was very influential in the 20th century in lots of different fields, history, religion and arts. He, like Freud, accepted the idea of the centrality of the libido, the sex bit, and the unconsciousness as well. But whereas Freud saw everything was about that, Jung actually saw it as just one of many drives. And he developed this idea that we had lots of different levels within our psyche, and that we played with personas. And he also believed that consciousness was split into, we had the conscious, and then we had unconscious processes. Excuse me. And the personal unconscious, which Nikki, you were talking about, contains repressed material,
not necessarily
from our
repressed
experience.
On the personal. It was memories. Some of them may be repressed.
Okay,
and that's the personal unconscious.
Okay, and then also, our unconscious was part of the collective unconscious, which contained the racial memory of humanity, and this was split. This was represented by archetypes, but that is a lot to deal with. So let's go into a song while everyone digests that.
Okay, we're going to start with one by Sufjan Stevens, and it's called Perpetual Self.
Thank you.
Brilliant, thank you for that. That was, who was that, Al?
That was Sufjan Stevens with The Perpetual Self.
Ah, did you choose that one?
I did.
That, I really enjoyed that, thank you. And it fits very well. So, because obviously with Jung, the person who we are discussing now, the perpetual self, is that another way of talking about the collective unconsciousness?
I don't know that it is, but the collective unconsciousness was one of Freud's sort of biggest... Jung.
The other one. Oh,
the other one. Yeah, was one of his sort of biggest theories that he was known for and is the biggest contribution to modern psychology. And his argument was that wherever you were born in the world and what society you're born into and what religion you're born into, you do not sort of say live it as the moment. You come with a kind of a baggage of your history, of your spirituality, of your culture that goes way, way back. And from the bit of reading that I've done, and it was just for the programme, and I was saying before that I've got really quite interested in Jung, because he's very, very, lots of very interesting concepts. He was quite a very spiritual person, did a lot of work on the soul. And his idea of the collective unconscious came in a dream. And he did a lot of dream work and imagery work, and that's what he's very, very well known for. And his dream was that he was in a sort of a very beautiful house that was very modern, very current, obviously to his time, because we're talking about the sort of the 1900s, early 1900s. And in the dream, he was walking around the house, and it was very modern and current upstairs, and he went down a level, and it was medieval, and everything became more basic. He went down to the foundation of the house, and he saw in his dream skeletons. It was like a cave, and he saw this as a representation of his unconscious that we all have in common. It's where we've all come from. He was talking, obviously, as a Westerner, as a European. He also travelled around the world and travelled to Africa, travelled... I don't know whether he did travel to India. I haven't finished all my reading, but he was very, very interested in Indian spirituality. And he was saying that really wherever you're born in the world, imagery will come to you that's related to you in ways that you may never have actually seen or experienced. So he would have dreams, and his clients would talk about visions or dreams of things that they would never, ever actually have had an opportunity to experience. So particularly he refers to one of his clients, who was a woman, who referred to a snake in her abdomen. Now, that's a very, very symbolic, very well-known representation of Kundalini.
Yeah.
That's from India, but she was a Westerner. She was a Swiss woman. And she had predictions. She had predictions as to how many sessions she'd need with him. She would say that the when she first sort of announced that there was a black snake in her abdomen, he was shocked. And then she was saying, "Oh, it's just an idea. It's not real. It's something I know's there." And as the sessions moved on, the vision of the coiled snake rose up through her body until it left her body. As she said, with the golden head, it came out of her mouth. It was just her visualizing her spirituality. And this was one of the personality types we talk when people are introverted.
Oh yeah,
and introverted and sensitive.
And so, I think you've done tests, haven't you?
Yes,
we're working out what we're like.
So, and they're going to give me a personality test, I think.
Well, it's very much about this idea of with the collective unconscious that you have all these archetypes, and they're infinite, though many of them are defined and very prominent.
Yes.
He argues that there could be as many as you could actually think of.
Right.
Yeah.
But he listed.
Yeah, there is. There's four main ones that he's focused on, but then there's hundreds that go down the list. You could almost be anything. He says they're formless things, and they only give them form as you express them through your writing, through your art, through your actions.
Right.
Yes, and these things all just bubble away. And he likened them to a jar of solution that crystals come out of, and they only have form as you experience them.
Right, okay.
Yep. So in terms of the test we're going to do, there's some pictures. Mm. And the picture
you're drawn to... Is this the Myers-Briggs test?
This is something we've found on
Myers, all right. Myers-Briggs.
On Google. Let's not go as low as saying we found it on Facebook. But, it's interesting. You know,
yes.
In the results where, you know, they lined up more than, say, astrology would with maybe how you see yourself.
Okay.
So,
well, I'll definitely have a go.
So we'll do that.
But can I ask, because I'm still trying to get my head around this, and this idea, because the collective unconsciousness, I have in my head from reading Jung when I was probably in my 20s, that isn't it something to do with when you die, your soul returns to the collective unconsciousness?
There's certainly, his belief is that, because he's no longer with us in body, that we... As very much like the yogis understand it, or as Buddhists understand it, and a lot of sort of religions, because he was a very spiritual person, also came from a background of spiritualism. He had spiritualists in his family, and would often be present at seances and things like that. He had an absolute knowing, he would say, not a belief, that we are all here to get ready for death, which is ready for the next stage, and that we should be welcoming death and just being very open to it, and because it's just the beginning of the next adventure.
The next adventure, did he come up with, have I attributed that to someone else?
I don't know whether you have, but I couldn't. I haven't read anything like that yet, but you're right. He believes in the soul going on.
I'm sure there is also a really great classic novel where the end of it, someone dies and their soul pops up into the collective unconsciousness, and you know, the self fades away. So it just joins this big, you know, sea mass. So there's that, okay, which may or may not be Jung. But then, so how is the collective unconsciousness in every one of us, in our heads? How is that? How does that work?
I read about it. I was going to ask you the question in terms of, I was looking at the archetypes and what they meant, what he felt they represented. But is he saying that they're inherited?
Yes.
Yes, that they are perpetual and ongoing. They're not learned.
They're not learnt memory. Okay, so they're in our memory banks when we're born.
And sort of...
Part genetic. They're genetic.
Yes. And
passed on.
One of the reasons I was particularly interested in reading... more about his theories is that he did a lot of work around sort of yoga and kundalini and things like that, and he also put forward an argument that Westerners shouldn't practice yoga. Now, listeners, you may or may not know that I'm a yoga teacher, and so that was very interesting to me as to why he wanted to suggest that Westerners didn't practice yoga, because in the current world of yoga there's quite a lot of debate on that very on that very subject matter, and the fact that particularly Western middle-class women shouldn't necessarily be teaching yoga because we don't have the spirituality in the background. You know, we're half the people of the yogis in India. What Jung suggests is that we don't have the framework, we don't have the collective unconscious in the West to hang the practices of yoga upon. We don't have the framework. So
that must have changed now, though, with like immigration and the internet and TV.
Well, I guess his argument is that they have to be built into you. But
through your DNA. Yeah.
Well, then that's still
down, doesn't it? Because what would in work the world today. He
did. Yeah.
You know.
He died in 61.
Relationships would have been very unusual.
Probably.
And migration was very small, wasn't it? And so it was probably very easy to say, well, the Indians are there.
You know,
the Africans are in Africa. The whites are in, you know, Europe.
White land.
And that's how it stayed, wasn't it?
Yes, but so Jung had this argument, did he, about white women teaching yoga?
No, white women teaching yoga has been one of the arguments that's current. In yoga circles that we have our own networks and associations that we debate.
Within. So he was just anti-Westerners generally teaching it.
No, he wasn't against teaching it. This is the argument that's current in sort of yoga world at the moment. His argument is that Westerners shouldn't practice it. A lot of yoga practices.
Westerners shouldn't practice it at all.
No, because he was saying that we don't have the framework on which to hang the practices because we don't have that DNA. But actually, if we all go back, we're all supposed to have originated from India anyway.
Yeah, but so they probably weren't doing yoga back then, were they? As they called out the primordial swamp.
But it's very interesting because I think people underestimate the power of yoga and particularly practices like pranayama and kundalini, which involves a lot of chanting, a lot of very specific breathing practices. Now, if your psyche is in a fragile place, any of those, say, breathing practices could actually push you one way or another. So if you're low, it could push you lower. If you're high, it could push you too high. I mean, it has been documented that certain practices have forced people into a nervous breakdown because they haven't had control of their situation, I think. And what Jung's saying is that
certain yoga practices can push you into a nervous breakdown.
If you are
that's a bit of a health warning, isn't it? I thought it was all about just sitting around going om.
Well, yeah, okay. You'll have to come to a class, Sid, again.
Sorry, I just went.
We're going to have another song, and are we going to have one of Nikki's this time, I believe?
Oh, I'm hoping that this is Slaves and the Hunter.
Oh, are freezing and the water is warm and the ice caps are melting. What will happen when they're gone? Will the experts look stupid and invert the facts? Will they give you back your donations or keep the paper stacks? The feeling is mutual. You don't like what we do because we say what we are thinking and that shocks and frightens you. The lion in the jungle shows no shame, it shows no pride. It does what it needs to stay strong and to survive, yeah. We're staring at the sun, oh it is reckless and pointless, but it's also very fun. It's useless and worthless. We're staring at the sun, oh it is reckless and pointless, but it's also very fun. It's useless and worthless. We're staring at the sun, oh it is reckless and pointless, but it's also very fun. It's useless and worthless. We're staring at the sun, oh it is reckless and pointless, but it's also very fun. You keep it, we don't want it. You keep it, we don't want it. You keep it, we don't want it. You keep it, we don't want it.
Hi, I've got a tape I want to play. Can't relax, can't sleep, bed's on fire. Don't touch me, I'm a real live wire. Psycho killer, qu'est-ce que c'est? Puffy, 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 better. Run, 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 run. You can't even finish it. You're talking a lot, but you're not saying anything. When I have nothing to say, my lips are sealed. Say something once, why say it again? Psycho killer, qu'est-ce que c'est? Papa, 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 papa.
Run, 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 run away. Oh, 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 oh
That was great. But there was a mistake earlier on. You said someone, and it was goat.
Yes, sorry. We got them in the wrong order there. We had goat, run to your mama, followed by slaves doing the hunter, and it was supposed to be the other way around. So apologies there, but only a minor mistake.
You got them both. That's all right. That's
right. What does anyone expect? Anyway.
And we've had a text in, not a text, a tweet. And which, can you read that? It's from Sean Groth.
Yes. Yes, it was. He's just saying the collective unconscious is our psyche's evolutionary inheritance built into our brains from prehistory. And so I guess the question is, do we believe that? Is that almost like a religious statement?
Can you say it again? It's our brain's evolutionary...
Inheritance. Built into our brains from prehistory. So when we're that tiny group of cells that is nothing, do we fundamentally believe that all that data and collective history gets pushed through at that point? Or is it floating externally and comes into us as we gain consciousness in the womb or as we come out? Where are these points? Yeah. I'm not asking for science, I'm asking what we think about that.
Have our brains actually evolved? I mean, have they evolved significantly since we were, I don't know, freestanding hominids?
Yes.
Okay. So have they evolved because of knowledge gained? Yes, they have, haven't they?
Well, there's the two arguments with evolution, isn't there? That you have the, like, this general curve, you know, through breeding, where you improve over time, or you have these critical events where people actually make massive jumps, aren't they, you know?
Right, yes.
You know, where you have, say, like a meteor strike, and you're forced, you know, for these massive changes to jump forward very quickly. And it's, you know, it's the survival of the fittest thing, isn't it? But actually it's more like stepped evolution, isn't it, than a graph.
Well, what do you... Does interestingly enough, I don't know what Sean thinks about that. Is that a statement that you made, Sean? Can you let us know? Tweet.
I think he was just trying to help us out. Flailing massively about the subject of Jung and... possibly a bit big for us, this one, but we will push
we didn't
on.
Get our expert, didn't come through.
No, well, so, we're not making excuses for that, though. We're here, we're trying to, you know, have a chat about it and offer some light entertainment and good tunes.
Yeah.
As ever.
So, well, let's find out, Nikki, do you believe that, then?
Well, I mean, you know where I sit on this kind of thing, because... I think
you're
for me,
on the magic carpet, sitting on the magic carpet.
I am sitting on the magic carpet. On the magic,
levitating.
On the magic yoga mat through space and time. There are certain things that you look at, and certainly Jung looked at, which was images that were coming to people that seemed to have no relevance to their life whatsoever. They couldn't have done. There wasn't the technology then. You know, now if we had something crop up quite, you know, sort of unusual in a dream, some sort of symbolism that a psychiatrist might analyse, you could say, because we have that access to the internet, that we are being fed images all the time. You pick it up from somewhere. But Jung was, you know, going back, he was having these sort of awakenings and experiencing people that had visions. He sort of worked with a lot of psychiatric patients that would tell him about their visions or speak out their reality, which obviously wasn't a regular reality, which was why they're in institutions. But he was able to relate those back to sort of images in mythology, into history, into all, you know, things that were very sort of prehistory as well. And you just think, well, how? I think the spirit is, you know, stronger. And, you know, perhaps there's more in this collective unconsciousness than we think. I'd like to think that there is. I otherwise, it hasn't been scientifically explained.
Okay.
So I'm gonna hang my hat on it.
Okay. Al? Come on, Mr. Cynic. It's always
well, as you know, I am a cynic. That's one of the main reasons I'm allowed to talk. I was only supposed to be here to push the buttons.
Yeah, but, that's true.
And I find it hard to believe. I think it's a really good idea, and all these frameworks for understanding our mind, you know, we almost have to simplify the way we construct our mind because it's so complicated. So this idea of having archetypes, having things that are quite specific jobs and you are a combination of them all, is quite a nice way of putting your mind together, isn't it? Because it allows us to be, you know, there's always this thing, isn't there, about, you know, the sexiness particularly, isn't it? You know, that's something that sort of almost sits outside of your consciousness. You really don't have very much choice about who you're attracted to, I feel. I think, you know, you can see someone and you can just, you know, they're attractive to you or they're not, aren't they? You don't make that conscious decision.
Okay.
Do you not?
Well, really, I'm trying to work out how this fits with Jung.
Well, it's that idea, isn't it, of the archetypes of being a little bit this and a little bit that, and you know, you've got this shadow, which is a big one that he identified as being, you know, the sort of the dark side, the sexy right. side, the, you know, the passionate side.
Does this have something to do with the anima and the animus as well?
No, they're separate. That's another one. There's four big ones on the piece I read. Obviously, there's a lot of interpretation about what he's written, and so the piece I read identified these four main archetypes, and there was the self, which is you know, your unconsciousness. Sorry, I'm just reading what I've wrote earlier, and you have the shadow, which is the dark one, which really appealed to me. It's the sort of the chaos and. You know, quite often in dreams it appears as monsters, demons, dragons and other wild or exotic creatures. Mm. You know, so that's quite exciting. Then you have the anima or the animus, which is your your sort of gender opposite, yourself as you are internally.
Right, yes,
the side
okay.
that you don't show.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And then you have your persona, which is the many masks that we wear, you know, in everyday life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way we put, you know.
Yeah.
Because the argument is that you're never truly yourself, are you? That you're always putting a face even to the people you hold. Even, you know, close to you, like your parents. You
know, yeah. Always yeah. to so your
that's,
parents.
That's one of the weirdest yeah. relationships, isn't it? It's the people you love most, and yet you probably deceive them more than anyone in your life.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. I think you do, don't you?
yeah, no,
you know,
probably.
To save them, you know, from the pain of your failure and all sorts, isn't it? You know,
I don't speak for yourself.
but the
anima and the animus, the male and female sides to the personality, I think are really interesting. I think I can see that definitely.
It exists in Eastern philosophy. You've got yin and yang.
Yeah.
And in yogic philosophy, it's Ida and Pingala. And it and Jung was quite interesting when he was saying that we are, if you're a female, you tend to suppress, as Westerners, we suppress our opposite. So as women, we suppress our masculine traits and side of us. and men suppress, we're encouraged to suppress, men, the feminine side. I had a lovely quote earlier, but I can't, regarding Jung saying that really this is, the repression of the masculine within women has held women back. And he was saying this, 50, 60 years ago, longer ago. So very, very interesting.
I don't know if that's true, though. I mean, as well, because if you think about the criticisms that are levelled at women who are career women and at the top of their league, like, imagine, well, Thatcher, for instance, was criticised for being too masculine, wasn't she? Mind you, it didn't hold her back.
Didn't hold her back, that. No, for
yeah,
sure.
No, it didn't hold her back.
Yes,
but then it's also kind of sexist in identifying certain aspects of the personality with men, when actually it could be just drive and intelligence and desire to succeed, which are non-gender specific.
Right.
Sorry.
No, right. That's good. That's all good stuff. Let's have a look at our tests then, because
okay, and I think you should tell everybody as well where you got this from in case they want to go and do it themselves.
I'll tweet that once we've done it.
Okay.
Rather than walk away from the microphone now. We'll have a couple of songs after we've talked about this, but it's a very short test. But we were saying earlier that it vaguely sort of represents how you might see yourself, and so it's you know, it's a bit of fun if nothing else. So Nikki, you did yours, and what did you come out as?
I was the child.
The child.
And what does that tell us about you?
What did it tell
you
us?
You are
about
always
me?
Smiling.
I'm always smiling. I believe that I have a sort of a sunny disposition and very optimistic, and I have faith.
Yes.
Apparently, and when
there you go,
and when
wow.
Al looked at it. He said, I think that pretty much sums you up, really. I think it's quite good, quite accurate. But yeah, and the level of naivety and, yeah.
Do you think you're naive?
Not particularly. Probably not, actually. Perhaps that's just one of the personas I put on.
Yes. To disarm people.
Right? Yes.
And, Sid and I came out as both being rebels.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Why does that not surprise me?
That surprises me. Like I said, I thought I was going to be like a leader. Or like...
And how we laugh.
Margaret.
But the rebel is a leader with a sort of a wayward side. If you read the full description there, and obviously you can have a play and see what you are later. But, we've come out, I guess we share some similarities, don't we?
We're both mouthy, gobby.
Yeah. We are. But there we go. Right, so I picked a couple of tunes, one for The Shadow and one for The Anima.
Great.
So we'll have those now. The Shadow, when I was reading through all the things, your base instincts, your sexiness, your, the monster, the snake, the demon. All I could actually came to mind was Iggy Pop, when he used to cut himself up and how he was just like feral and almost not of this world.
Yeah, that's great.
So we're going to have a dirty old Iggy track. And if ever there was a woman that lived inside me, it would be PJ Harvey. So we're going to have one from her as well. So that she doesn't actually live inside me. She's very tiny, though. Look, anyway.
Keep in someone going, let me out.
We should have those. Oh, look out.
Stick it. Hey!
and she's back in the room.
Hello. Sorry, I just had to wash my hands because I had to catch a piece of Nikki's lovely cake in my hand and squeeze it. And it is really delicious. So how comes we can have this cake? Is it good? Good for us?
It's good for you, cake.
Cake is good for you. So what's because you said this is good cake.
This is cake. It's almost guilt-free. Mm-hmm. I had to make a couple of modifications on this. And let me describe it to you, listeners. It's a very, very, very rich, truffly, chocolatey.
It's lovely.
Covered in fresh blueberries.
Mm.
Cake. We had a team meeting just before Christmas, and we decided that we were all going to do something really positive for January. And then we were going to report back on this particular show as to how well we'd got on with our New Year's resolutions. And shall we remind ourselves what they were?
Well, mine was just to get off the cake and biscuits, really. I mean, I've given up smoking. I've given up almost all the bad things in my life. I don't even drink all that much anymore. But I do love a biscuit and a bit of cake. And so, yes, I tried in vain, I forgot I got to say.
Really?
I was dreadful. I didn't even last for half an hour, I don't think.
I did see you in Tesco with loads and loads of sweets at the till. Yeah.
It's not impossible, well, yes. But no, just biscuits. Biscuits.
Really? So did you actually manage a week?
Oh, no.
Really?
I think the first shop I walked past, I just autopilot.
Gosh, was that because do you think that's because you've given up everything else?
Possibly. I mean, you know.
And that's your, like, last I think bastion when I gave up smoking, of delight.
That was when I got tubby.
When was that? About
6 years ago.
Yes. Well, it is tough.
It is, yes. But sugar, I think, is quite an addictive substance, isn't it? I think if you start punctuating your day with sugar...
I cannot imagine life without sugar.
Then, you know, I think your body gets used to it, doesn't it? Like everything else that you do. So that, particularly that sort of half two sort of lull in the day, I'd always go out, you know, biscuit, you know, or a lot of biscuit.
But we do know that causes...
death.
It causes death, ultimately. Death by sugar. But, yeah, that's, you know...
Death by chocolate.
Yeah, because you give yourself energy spikes in the day, followed by great big lows,
yes.
Dips through refined sugars. So what I've bought in today, I've got from a lovely recipe book, which I bought myself just before Christmas, which is called A Modern Way to Eat, by a wonderful lady called Anna Jones. And
have some?
Am I going to have some? Yeah. I have been picking.
There's a tiny little bit.
There's another big slice there. But this has been made, and I'm not saying it's calorie free, at all, because it tastes too good to be calorie free.
No, it's far too dense, isn't it?
But it's it's gluten free, and it's not made with any refined sugar, so that's sweetened with maple syrup.
Lovely.
And things that are unrefined, they keep their natural mineral contents and their vitamin contents, which if you refine certain ingredients that get lost. So when you have something like this, you're actually giving yourself some goodness. If you buy a cake that's made of white flour with white sugar, you are taking taking in substances that's had every last bit of goodness stripped out of it and just clogging your system up with it. So ultimately, the idea with this, it is a very, very rich cake. It's also made with coconut milk, coconut oil, which we do know that is really good to help you lose weight. It is made with real chocolate as well, so sort of 70% cocoa.
Can you put the recipe up then?
We will put the recipe up.
We will put the recipe up. And, yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a celebration cake.
Yeah, it's lovely.
You know, it's a special occasion cake. And as I was saying to Al earlier, I think if you are somebody that has a very sweet tooth, getting something that's got that sort of richness and density can kind of give you the fix... I'm guessing, but I don't have a sweet tooth. That's not my problem.
No,
so
I'm over savory,
I don't know, but I don't know whether you could just take a small bit of it and that sort of satiate that craving. Mm. But I was looking at me as if to say, no, I need the whole thing.
but how did your
dry January going then?
It just got a bit soggy.
Did it?
Yeah, it's 7 days.
7 days?
Seven whole days. Really rocked dry January. To be honest, I was doing it in support of my husband, and as soon as he came off that particular wagon, I thought, wow.
If you can't beat him, staying on here.
Oh, if you can't beat him, join him. And I did want to support him doing the whole of January dry. If he had done it, I would have done it. But it wasn't to be. And then somebody promised me a bottle of Prosecco in celebration of something. And then that was it. I, you know, didn't take much persuading. I'm good though, but... we were discussing. January is not a time for giving things up.
It's not. A time for storing fat and laying low.
Yeah. Well, I did really try to do dry and no smoking January. And actually, me trying to do a dry smoke-free January just makes me drink like a normal person.
No, that's probably right,
then,
isn't it?
So I was drinking on a Saturday, I think, but I did go about 2 weeks, and then I had a drink on a Saturday, and then I think I had another drink last Friday when I was out in London. Enjoyed it, but of course, as soon as I have a drink, I have a cigarette. So I haven't smoked at all, apart from when I've had a drink.
You feel better?
No, I've not heard. I'm coughing and spluttering like an old man. No. I haven't seen any difference, really.
Have you tried vaping?
Well, I just worry about vaping because I just think if I'm not smoking during the day now or during the evening, unless I have a drink, which maybe once a week, then if I vape, I'll reintroduce nicotine into my system full time, won't I?
Well, I suppose
so. I'll get addicted again, whereas for some reason I'm not. Don't feel the urge to smoke.
That is the accusation against all those nicotine products, isn't it? All the Nicorettes, is that basically people just use them for a bit and then carry on smoking, and they don't really help you stop at all.
Yeah. I mean, if I don't need to smoke, then that's the best thing, isn't it? Mm. It is just with the drink. And I don't think I'd have a vape if I... No, not if you had like 3 glasses and you've forgotten that you're meant to be giving up smoking. I wouldn't go, I need to have a vape, not a fag, no. But I will continue this and let you know what happens.
Excellent.
Unless everybody's switched off because they're so bored by now. But I think we're going to go into some music, aren't we?
Yes, Sid suggested that we should have Whipping Piccadilly by Gomez to cheer us up, because it's an old favourite, and with any luck, I've got the right one. We shall see.
Nope.
Let's have another go. Apologies, listeners.
Once upon a time, not too long ago, we took a day out in Manchester. We all fall down, there's not enough hours in us. Our way to the toilet with the Kung Fu King. There's not enough hours in our day. I remember seeing someone dressed in a suit, looking like a lunatic, and we all fall down. Not enough hours in a trip. Well, Academy card wheels breaking your hands, but we got lovely posters for sale. And we all fall down. It's not enough hours in a day. We like loving, and the wine we share.
So I think now we're going to talk about tits.
Are we not going to do jokes for January?
Well, yes, same thing. So, anyhow, no more page three, which I must have been taking my finger off the ball or my eye off the ball, because I didn't know it had come back, but we knew that, I think, Wednesday...
It went,
and somebody from the Times actually wrote about it. The Times is part of News International, which owns the Sun as well. So you would imagine that they knew, one hand knew, the left hand knew what the right hand was doing. But it went and there was debates about it. And then it came back again,
yes,
apparently. So it came back on Thursday, did you say?
Friday. Yes, with the very Sun-like, it came under their clarifications and corrections section with the headline, we had a memory lapse.
Mammary lapse.
Unpunned the pun. But yes, and so there it is, it's back. And, you know, we talk about feminist issues a lot on the show, and the reason I wanted to talk about it was, you know, is it a relevant fight?
Is it a relevant fight? Is what? Getting page three off
Is it a matter of decency and appropriateness, or is it still a feminist issue?
Well, it's like I said, I think it's a matter of context, and it's about seeing, having a newspaper and seeing a naked woman in there who is completely objectified and loving it, obviously. And do we, you know, is a naked woman news? This is meant to be a family newspaper. It started in the 70s, and, you know, we've moved on from the 70s in a lot of ways. And there are some things that are very old fashioned. And actually, Stella Creasy, I said to you just a second ago that she had tweeted a really good, here we go. This was her comment about the page three coming back on the Friday. So the Sun is going back to doing page three. This is a bit like a drunken lechy uncle at a wedding who doesn't get the message, makes everyone uncomfortable, which I thought was really good.
Spot on, really.
But it's, you know, for me, it's context, and it's still, of course, it's worth fighting against. Everything's worth fighting against. I know something people think you should pick your battles, but I don't like it. I'm uncomfortable with it. And, I just think it's really antiquated. Society's moved on from that. Well, you know, when it started, we didn't have the Sexual Equality Act. It was came in 75. So we do have that now. And it just feels like it is just very old, very old-fashioned, very backwards-looking. And it's, I really don't think it does anything to help us trying to get, achieve equality in this country.
So the Sun, a massive paper, claims to and probably does wield enormous political power, doesn't it? And it's a bit, mm-hmm. you know, in the, you know, always saying that it picks the Prime Minister and no one else. So a fight like this with the Sun, where you've got, people like us that it bothers. I was saying earlier that I changed that. I stopped going to the hairdressers that I went to because I noticed they had a page three calendar up, and I don't like the kids to see that. And I'm generally quite liberal, but it is very much about context. But why do the Sun perpetuate it then? I mean, that's the question, isn't it? What's their motivation? They've obviously decided to pick a fight with people over it this week by taking it off and putting it back. They definitely see that that's going to aggravate the left.
Yeah. And, you know, and feminists,
yes,
who they don't like.
So my thought on it, you know, because obviously, you know, there's not really much left to say on, you know, whether it's good or bad. It's quite clearly a dreadful thing. But, you know, why perpetuate it? Why pick the fight? Is there a motivation there? Is there, you know, I'm just asking for opinion, really.
Is it the kind of Nigel Farage effect, do you think? Is it like, well, it's just common sense, you can do what it were, all these bloody Puritans, they're not going to stop me getting the paper with women's tits in it? Is it that kind of thing, you know?
But, you know, surely the Sun aren't going to stand behind Farage in the next election, are they?
Please,
God, no.
Because he can't be Prime Minister, he can't win. But, you know, he could wield the balance of power.
He could mess things up. I'm sure, you know, I'm a great conspiracy theorist when it comes to media moguls trying to control what goes on in this country in terms of finance. And
that the Lib Dems at the moment are an angel on the shoulder of the Conservatives, you know, at least pulling them slightly away from some of their awful decisions.
Mm.
And, you know, that's just my opinion. And obviously, if you put Farage on, that's the devil on the other shoulder, isn't it? And, you know, it's basically that he's going to underwrite all those really unpleasant things that they probably really want to do anyway, you know, like killing the NHS and all that.
Yes. Well, he's pretty much said that, hasn't he? Anyway.
Yeah. So are these little manoeuvres by the Sun, are these part of a pull to the right that they're making, do you think?
What, the Sun? The Sun is right.
I know, but they supported Blair, didn't they? They would say that they're...
Yeah, but that's because he was moving to the right, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Is it... I don't know.
Is it too much of a question?
It just seems really puerile. To me, doing this, taking it off, and then basically it's just,
they're just laughing.
They're just sticking one finger up. And I don't know, the question is, what do their readership make of it? I mean, I don't think any of us here are readers of The Sun, are we?
No. Someone must have had the idea, mustn't they? Let's pull it for a couple of days, put it back.
And tell everyone that we're pulling it.
I suppose anything for... readership, but from the campaigns they're saying, well, it's, but at least it's brought it to the fore again, and people are it's given the against argument more publicity.
But all of this is what always happens. Have you looked at the timeline of No More Page Three?
No.
It's full of rape threats and death threats, and it is like it's if you speak out against this kind of crap publicly, then you just get loads of rape threats all the time. That's just what happens to women who speak out. And that is completely tied into what Page Three kind of promotes about women being just there to be sexually available, blah, 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 blah. And the thing with rape is it's all, rape is about the value that is placed on women and girls in society. And at the moment, our rape statistics in England and Wales are really massively on the increase. Yeah. So I think if you're not part of the solution to that, then you are part of the problem, and the Sun is part of the problem. It needs to take a good, long, hard look at itself in the mirror, I think.
Yes.
Pun intended.
But
I didn't even get that. That's brilliant, Nicky.
We'd suggested actually playing a couple of quite fruity, sort of silly songs that were sort of vaguely misogynist, or not more than vaguely misogynist.
Yes, misogynist. Yeah.
I don't know, they seem a bit hard now, but that's what we've got lined up.
So, let's put Andy Williams on.
We've got to cue him up.
So okay.
We're going to have
let's put the other one on.
Prince Buster's Ten Commandments, which is it's a funny thing. I quite often play at weddings. So there we go.
The Ten Commandments of man, given to all man, through the inspiration of I, Prince Buster. One, thou shalt have no other man but me. Two, thou shalt not encourage no man to make love to you, neither kiss nor caress you, for I am your man. A very jealous man, and is ready to lay low any other man that may intrude in our love. 3. Remember to kiss and caress me, honor and obey me in my every woman fancy, 7 days a week and twice on Sundays, cause at no time will I ever be tired of IT hit. Honor my name, so that every other woman may honor it also. 5. Thou shalt not provoke me to anger, or my wrath will descend upon you heavily. My pockets at night, annoy me with your ear saints. Commandment 7. Thou shalt not shout my name in the street if I'm walking with another woman, but wait intelligently until I come home, when we both can have it out decently. For I'm your man, a funny man, and detest the scandal in public places. Commandment 8. Thou shalt not drink nor smoke or use profane language, for those bad habits I will not stand for. 9. Thou shalt not commit adultery, for the world will not hold me guilty if I commit murder. 10. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's dress, nor her shoes, or her peru, nor her bed, nor her hat, nor anything that's hers. Neither shalt thou call my attention to anything that may be for sale in any stores, for I will not give thee anything but what you actually need for your purpose. Those are the 10 commandments of man given to woman by me, Bruce Foster.
Hey, little girl, comb your hair, fix your makeup. Soon he will open the door. Don't think because there's a ring on your finger, you needn't try anymore. For wives should always be lovers too. Run to his arms the moment he comes home to you. I'm warning you. Day after day, there are girls at the office, and men will always be men. Don't send him off with your hair still in curlers. You may not see him again. For wives should always be lovers too. Run to his arms the moment he comes home to you. He's almost here. Hey, little girl, better wear something pretty, something you'd wear to go to the city and dim all the lights, pour the wine, start the music, time to get ready for love. Time to get ready for love. Time to get
this is what you'll get when you mess with us.
You never realize.
you. So thank you to all our listeners tonight. And yeah, I hope that was good. You enjoyed it. And next month we will be doing Kay and we will be doing Karma and Keynes, exploring capitalism. And we will have another short story for you, but we don't know which one it's going to be yet. So watch the Twitter feed and we'll announce it there. Al, you've got your notebook in front of you.
Yeah, I was just going to do those last two songs. We had Screaming Trees, The Girl Behind the Mask. And before that, we obviously had Karma Police by Radiohead. And they're the end of our choices there for the evening. So, yeah, hope you invite those along with the chat.
And we'll be back on the air February 22nd, I believe. Right. Is that right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, February 22nd. So see you then.
Look forward to it.
Good night.
Brilliant. Good night.
Good night.